his thinking, or whether he actually did have some sixth sense. Yeah.
What was the physical plant of the base like, especially your own quarters and that of the other junior officer?
Well, the layout was to avoid concentration of manpower in case of raids, you see, and so we were well distributed, and I got used to a bicycle, as most of the boys got used to bicycles very much in, under those conditions. I would say it was a very healthy life.
When you say
on the ground,
widely distributed, how?
Well, Nissen huts would be outside the perimeter area, and usually using tree cover and things of that nature, and you had a common mess hall and that sort of thing, but really the size of the buildings was kept, I think, understandably as small as possible so as to escape detection, you know.
Common mess hall, by that you mean common to the officers?
Yeah, we had our officers' mess, you see, sergeant's mess and so forth, and there was the other mess, too.
So other than the wide, those spread outness of it, there was nothing particularly unusual that distinguished it from the physical aspects of a military base?
Well, except that as a military base concerning the Army, you know, the permanent stations. I was not on many permanent stations. I was principally on satellites, which were attached to permanent stations and were regarded pretty well as limited only to wartime, and it was not intended that they should become permanent installations, you know, and neutralize all this good farmland.
What would be, other than the Nissen hut, would there be anything else different about a semi?
Satellite station?
Yeah.
Well, it, for instance, lacked the permanent hangars of your main station. Everything was distributed. Your aircraft and your manpower were distributed, you see. You had your little points around off the perimeter track where the aircraft were based, you know. And you had to go by truck out to your particular aircraft, both for your daily inspection and then to board the aircraft, you see. And
what, when you say they had no hangars, what, none at all?
Well, the permanent hangar was a fairly expensive installation, you know.
So they didn't build a jury, sort of a semi-permanent hangar.
They would not do any too permanent overhaul work on your aircraft, you know.
I see.
The crews were as mobile as the air crews.
When you weren't flying in the plane or performing your duties, what did you and your fellow officers do in your spare time? What sort of activity?
Well, I suppose this is where the individual was free to choose his own particular pursuits. And some used to live it up in the town, and others took less active types of exercise, such as cycle trips and things of that kind, you know. But we all enjoyed getting away from the station and getting out, and usually there was some town, you know, not too far away, and we would arrange to go there when our off days, you know.
Were organized, was there any intra or interstation sports competition that you can remember?
No, I have no recollection of that at all. We used to have, say, on what we call duff days when ops had been scrubbed, which has been canceled because of weather, the occasional political talk in which we had some guidance from the permanent officers attached to the station, and that was generally aimed at enlightenment, you know, the background of the war, to more or less give you a better opportunity to brush up on and why you were doing what you were doing and how things were going. Of course, we had the radio, the BBC, and naturally a complement of the daily papers. The principal daily papers were always there. And I used to like those studies because being an old weekly newspaper man, I was very interested in public affairs.
Yes. What about group social activities? If well, the mess dinner sort of thing.
Well, I would say that formal mess life was at a minimum. There was, I would say, an easygoing semi-formality about messing, you know. Occasionally we'd have parties and there'd be all sorts of pranks played. I remember one wing commander wrote his name pretty indelibly into the minds of a lot of the fellows when they had accepted his olives and found that the red core was full of cayenne pepper.
Did the Air Force organize social events with the people in the nearest town that you're aware of?
No, you were pretty well left to your own devices, and you made your own friends. I found the time went very quickly. I was never really bored. I, you know, set about. I did a certain amount of reading, but I didn't let the grass grow under my feet either, because it was nice to get out. And the great thing I enjoyed about the life there was, and in my own memory, is the contrast between the sort of the loneliness, you might call it, over the target area, and then coming back to the peacefulness of the British countryside. It sort of endeared itself to you in new terms. You began to appreciate life better, and you appreciated people better, and it didn't matter who they were. Everybody was sort of on a very friendly basis, and the usual sort of formalism of polite society, you know, was more or less absent. Everybody was in this, you know, together, and I think there was a great feeling of togetherness there. It didn't need artificial stimuli. It grew out of a sense of common risk, and the ground crews felt it very keenly when one of their favorite crews would go, you know, and wouldn't come back, and everybody felt a sense of loss. I suppose that is true also, more so of army life, but I've never experienced army wartime conditions on the ground.
Were the people you served with primarily people like yourself signed on for the duration, or was it a, what sort of mix was there between the regular force and?
Well, I would say that the fellows who signed on for the duration naturally were lacking in the training, not in the matter of flying, but the details of mess life for one thing, Air Force tradition for another, such as ceremonial parades and things like that. And Sometimes, for instance, I remember there was one amusing occasion. There was one chap there who was a regular officer. He was a squadron leader, and he had a very fine mustache, and the boys always used to say that when it was a tough target, his mustache visibly drooped at the ends. And you knew how tough the target was going to be, according to whether Fletcher's mustache's ends were up or down. I mean, the PFs, they used to call them, the permanent force, you know. I thought they were...